الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر
In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the Creator and the Sustainer of the Universe, peace and blessings upon His servant and messenger, Muhammad, forever. Amen. I bear witness that there is no God worthy of worship except the one true God. And I bear witness that Muhammad is the messenger and servant of God. I greet you, all of the viewers of the Islam in Focus program, with the universal greetings of peace, the greeting that have been used by all of the prophets, from Abraham to Prophet Muhammad. Peace and blessings be upon them all. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. In today's program, we have our 10th program in our series on the moral teachings of Islam. More specifically, we'll be continuing with our discussion of the prohibition prohibition of eating of pork in Islam. We'll be looking at the chemical and medical reasons for this prohibition. I have joining me on the program today, as usual, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Last week we began our discussion of this very interesting topic, and we talked about some of the reasons behind the prohibition of pork. Could you perhaps just quickly go back and summarize, highlight the main points that we touched on in our program last week?
Okay. I think it was basically five areas that we discussed. First of all, a discussion of some of the verses in the Quran which specify the prohibition of eating pork. And we said in one of those verses in chapter 6, the impression is left that it is not only prohibited for Muslims, but that it has been a universal prohibition in all faiths.
Mm-hmm.
This was confirmed when we looked at some aspects of the comparative question here. And we referred to the Old Testament, and we found that especially in Leviticus chapter 11, verses 7 and 8, in the book of Isaiah chapter 65, verse 4, 66, verse 17, in all of these, we seem to find a very clear and decisive prohibition about eating pork in the Old Testament. And we said simply that the Quran, being the last revelation of God, was revealed to Prophet Muhammad, as these laws were revealed before to Moses and Jesus, peace be upon them. And as such, it simply confirmed the universal prohibition of pork. A question was raised also about the New Testament and as to why some Christians, for example, mm-hmm. justify eating that. And we discussed that from the point of view of the writing of a Christian priest that we discussed his booklet last time, The Hog, Should It Be Used for Food? And as a Christian scholar himself, he quotes and discusses these issues that there is no evidence whatsoever in the New Testament that this thing has been made permissible, and that as Jesus, peace be upon him, said, he came not to destroy the law or prophet, he came to fulfill. He discusses in some details those kind of explanations. I added to that also some of the historical aspects and the dream of St. Peter's, and we said that this could not be taken as a legislative basis to validate eating pork. And then we started discussing the reasons behind it, and we said for the believer who really believe in God and trust in Him, the fact that God forbid that in itself suffices, but God does not also want us to accept things dogmatically, so there's no restriction, at least from the Muslim point of view, about research and finding out some reasons, provided that those reasons would not be the condition or precondition for accepting the commands of God and obeying Him. And we said we get a hint from the Quran, at least partly, when it describes khanzir or pig as rijs, unclean or dirt. We said there must be some good reason, because there is nothing whatsoever that is restricted in Islamic dietary laws unless it has a very good reason, so whether we have fully understood it or not, as we have seen in the previous programs. And finally, the last question was whether the pig is the same like other animals that may eat filth. We said there's a big difference, because the pig has only one stomach, so there isn't much lengthy process of refinement and purification of food. In 3 hours, it is all digested. Whereas in other animals, like chicken, you have two stomachs, the glandular and the gizzard. In other cud-eating animals, you have three stomachs, so that the digestive process is much longer and purifies food a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well now, looking at the question of the pig and the point that's made about it eating garbage and so on,
mm-hmm.
what about the situation where its food could be controlled? Would that improve its feeding habits?
Well, you could possibly isolate the pig, mm-hmm. but you can never really change its very nature. It just reminds me with one interesting statement made by Reverend Voris. He says that the naturally filthy hog could be forced into the most sanitary conditions, nourished upon delicacies, cake, pie, and heavenly hash, and still it would be unfit for food merely because God said he is unclean to you. Of their flesh shall you not eat. That's from a Christian priest's point of view. Well, like I said, whatever you do to the pig, you cannot change its basic habits. It would eat even its own refuse if it doesn't find something filthy to feed on. So it's just the nature of it. But in addition to this, there's no reason, again, for the farmer raising pigs to avoid feeding the pig filth, because economically speaking, it's a garbage eater. Even in a scientific book called Modern Biology, which is a common book taught in a variety of high schools and universities, there is a picture there that shows the kind of feeding that's given to pigs. Here is a man holding a barrel and just pouring down the waste, the garbage. So by its very nature, the pig is simply a garbage eater, as we called it last time, a scavenger. But this is not the only thing, of course, because as we'll, as the program unfolds, we will see that there are a lot of chemical and medical reasons why it shouldn't really be regarded as fit for food.
Well, before we go into those chemical arguments that could be made, I wonder if perhaps you could explain the main arguments against pork from the biochemical point of view.
Well, before I start that, I'd like first to give acknowledgement to a very useful booklet on the subject. And this one is written by Dr. Ahmed Sakhar. It's called Pork, Possible Reasons for Its Prohibition. Dr. Sakhar is a specialist in nutrition and food technology,
mm-hmm.
and he served as professor and chairman of the Department of Chemistry and Nutrition at the National Chiropractic University in Illinois. So I tried to compile some charts to indicate some of the various chemical aspects of it. But to put it in a rather brief way before we go on details. Even though it is difficult to digest excessive amounts of fat, any excess fat of any animal, pig or otherwise, has possible harm to the human. But we will see that the pig fat in particular is very, very harmful and very, very difficult to digest and to burn. It is something that relates to the chemical structure of the fat molecule, just to put it in the simplest and most straightforward form.
Perhaps could you go on and explain this a little bit? Could you explain why this is so?
Well, here is a chart which, like I said, is just a modification or based on the book by Dr. Sakhar. In this chart here, we have, first of all, the classification or general classification of the types of fats and oils. This doesn't include all of them, but just some of the more common ones. We're using some abbreviation here. For example, the first one, PL, stands for phospholipids. Lipids means simply fat.
Mm-hmm.
Phospholipids. Glycolipids. Neutral lipids. And then we have waxes and steroids. Our main concern, there are others, of course, as I said before, But our main concern, really, when we talk about diet, are the neutral lipids, so-called. Neutral lipids may take any of these forms. Again, we're using abbreviations. MG stands for monoglyceride, diglyceride, triglyceride, and free fatty acids. These are the various forms of the neutral lipids. These forms are, among all of these forms, the one that really is of particular interest when we study the question of digestion is the triglyceride, or TG, as we used in this particular chart. This is the one that we have really to look into very closely.
Well, could you explain why the reason for focusing on the triglyceride, why it is so important?
The reason behind is that by looking into the structure, the chemical structure of the triglyceride, which is mainly really a fat molecule, mm-hmm. by looking into that structure and see how the fatty acids are distributed, or in which pattern they are distributed, we will be able to make some inferences, or chemists in fact, make inferences mm-hmm. as to how that relates particularly to the process of digestion. For example, if you look here in the second part of the chart, each triglyceride molecule, or you could say a fat molecule, mm-hmm. simplified, is actually composed of glycerol and three fatty acids. There are all kinds of fatty acids, but that's why it's called triglyceride. It has three of them, three combinations. The fatty acids are divided or codified into two basic groups: saturated fatty acids, we're using S for that, mm-hmm. and unsaturated fatty acids. Moving on, just to explain that further, to the second chart that we have here, we have also the distribution of the various fatty acids, or the various forms it takes in the triglyceride molecule.
Now, when we look at this chart, the numbers 1, 2, and 3...
You're referring to this one here?
Yes, on the left-hand side of the chart. What do these signify?
Well, these are used to refer to what chemists call position 1, position 2, and position 3. These are simply the way that the structure is distributed, or the pattern of distribution of various acids in the triglyceride molecule, the order in which they are put. For example, if you look in the first one here, you have all three U's. U, both in position 1, 2, as well as 3. This means then that in the triglyceride molecule, or the fat molecule, you have unsaturated fatty acids in position 1, in 2, as well as 3. In the next one, for example, you have saturated fatty acids in position 1, unsaturated in 2, unsaturated in 3, and so on. So you have here a total of 8 different combinations of how these various acids are distributed within the triglyceride molecules.
Mm-hmm.
You notice here, there's one thing that I tried to make in this chart to make it a little easy to follow. You notice here that I tried to put the four forms of triglyceride molecules which has the unsaturated fatty acids in position 2 on one side, and the one that has saturated fatty acids in position 2 in a separate group, even though these are various legitimate forms of the triglyceride molecule. Good.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if perhaps you could explain, you know, what the problem is of having S, or saturated fatty acids, in the particular position number 2.
Well, the reason behind it is that in order to digest the fats that we eat, not in order to break it down, the fats or the triglyceride molecule, it must be broken into much simpler forms in the human digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be broken, for example, down into monoglyceride, diglyceride, free fatty acids, glycerol, so that it could be absorbed easily. This process is called by biochemists a process of hydrolysis.
Mm-hmm.
Hydrolysis. This process of hydrolysis is facilitated by a special secretion that comes from the human pancreas. It's called pancreatic lipase, just to help break down.
Mm-hmm.
The scientists have discovered that this secretion, the pancreatic lipase, cannot easily hydrolyze or break down the triglyceride molecule or the fat molecule into the, you know, simpler components or simpler forms if the position 2 in the structure of the molecule has saturated fatty acids. In other words, you could have two different kinds of triglyceride molecule. One of them has saturated fatty acids in position 2, the other one has unsaturated. And we said that in the digestive process, if it has unsaturated fatty acids in position 2, it's easier to digest. If it has saturated in position 2, it is very, very difficult to digest. And the main problem, to come to your question, is that experiments showed that the pig fat follows that particular structure where saturated fatty acids are in position 2. In fact, it is exactly this one, USU. So you have saturated fatty acids in the second position, and as such, it's very difficult for the pancreatic lipase to digest it.
Now, this problem of digestion, is it unique to the fat that comes from the pig, or does it apply to other animal fats as well? You know, things that we consume, like, for example, fat from beef fat or sheep fat or that kind of...
Well, to start with, we cannot say that the particular this particular structure of the triglyceride molecule or the having saturated fatty acids in position 2 is absolutely unique to the pig. But, in fact, some studies were conducted on some meat-eating animals,
mm-hmm.
known as the carnivorous animals. And it was found that, like the pig, they have a high concentration of saturated fatty acids in position 2. But what animals they were experimenting with? Cats, dogs, rats,
mm-hmm.
and pigs.
Pigs.
This is one. This means then, like we said before, that the structure of the molecule itself, the fat molecule, in this meat-eating animals is very difficult to digest. So the pig is similar to them in that sense. But on the other hand, other experiments were conducted on edible animals, that's the vegetarian animals, plant-eating, or the some call them herbivorous animals, including things like sheep, cattle, camels, deer, and goat. Unlike the first group, it was found that, generally speaking, in these animals, there is a high concentration of unsaturated fats in position 2, which means, by implication then, that in this type of structure, it's a lot easier to digest, but it's very difficult in other meat-eating animals, and strangely enough, and the pig, which really places the pig more or less in the classification of unedible or non-edible animals, at least from the chemical standpoint.
Now, if the if lard or the fat from the pig is not digested properly, what happens to it when you take it into your system and when it goes into the bloodstream?
Well, what happens to it is that it is absorbed as is. You see, when we take fat as diet, it goes into our bloodstream and then it's deposited in the human tissues. Now, in the case of plant-eating animals, vegetarian animals, when you take this fat, it breaks down, it's digested, and it goes in the bloodstream, and then it is resynthesized in the form of human fat. So it doesn't accumulate as animal fat, in human fat, and then deposited in the tissues. Whereas, when it's not absorbed like that, when it's difficult to break down, like the case of the pig fat and other meat-eating animals, this kind of fat is absorbed as is and accumulates in the tissues. That reminds me of one thing that you were mentioning last time after the program when you said you are what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, imagine person accumulating a lot of animal fat in his body. This is shown here in the diagram. For example, we said here that in the first four forms of triglyceride molecule or fat molecule, this were consistent with plant-eating animals, that because they all have unsaturated fatty acids in position 2, they are, in terms of digestion, are very easy to digest. It is deposited in the human as human fat, whereas in the other categories here where you have saturated fatty acids in position 2, this was more consistent as a structure, generally speaking, with meat-eating animals, including the pig. Digestion, in that case, as we have shown, is very difficult, and fat is deposited as animal fat. But there's something really that's even more fascinating in this whole thing, is that when you really look in this chart, like I said before, among the animals used in that experimentation, that is the ones that are easy to digest, that are resynthesized as fats in human form, include poultry, beef, sheep, things like deer. This is not an exhaustive list. On the other hand, the other type, which is difficult to digest, include dogs, cats, rats, and
pigs.
So that's the point I was saying earlier. It doesn't really belong to edible animals. Not, we're not talking about strict scriptures,
mm-hmm.
whether scriptures in the Old Testament or confirmation in the New Testament or the Quran, the last revelation, but even on purely
scientific classification,
at least insofar as the issue of digestion of fat, generally speaking, it doesn't really belong.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one area of confusion that I'd like to ask if you perhaps can clarify for me. Now, I think chemically speaking, you've been able to demonstrate quite convincingly how lard is very difficult to digest.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people have submitted that lard is better because of the fact that it has a high percentage of unsaturated fats.
Mm-hmm.
Could you perhaps just comment on that and maybe clarify the confusion there between the possible benefit from unsaturated versus the problems with digestion?
Okay, I can try to clarify that again as simply as I could as a layman. I'm glad at least that I'm not a chemist. I'm referring to authorities, so maybe I can understand the most viewers' approach in understanding the subject. This also has been treated in this book here by Dr. Sachs on the pork and various reasons for its prohibitions. But it seems that there is a big mix-up between whether the fat you consume is saturated or unsaturated on one hand, and between the specific structure of that fat, the chemical structure of the fat molecule.
Mm-hmm.
See? If you refer back to the chart, I mentioned earlier, for example, that the pig fat follows this particular pattern here in terms of the molecular structure. You have U, S, U. So it's true, yes, there's more concentration of unsaturated fat in the pig fat. But where? In which position? Exactly, in positions 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
But the crucial position for the purpose of digestion, as we said before, is position 2. Because that's the position where if you have saturated fatty acids It is very, very difficult, like we said before, for the pancreatic lipase to break down the fat molecule into simpler form and as such make the digestion easy. So in other words, yes, you have a lot of unsaturated fatty acids in the pig fat, but the most crucial position is saturated, and still it doesn't help really much in the in terms of digestion. So it's the structure rather than the percentage of unsaturated or saturated fatty acids.
Okay, well, I'd like to just perhaps move away from this for a moment to another aspect of the possible harms that could come from eating pork, and that has to do with the medical viewpoint. I wonder if perhaps you could comment on this, the medical aspect.
Well, in generally speaking, we can say that there are a number of germs, bacteria, and parasites which infest the pig and live in its flesh. But the most dangerous of these is the trichina, or trichinella, as another title given to it, which is a kind of round worm. Here is a chart which shows the various stages in the development of the trichina in the infested pig. Those trichina are encapsulated, usually, in a form of tiny cysts where they concentrate there. As we see here in the first figure of that diagram, when a person eats or consumes infested meat, what happens is that when it goes through the digestive system, the juices that we have in the digestive system breaks down or digests the capsule or the cyst which contains the larva.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, the larva is freed out of that shell or capsule. Now, after the larva is released, it gets developed or grows in full adulthood, as is shown here in the second part of the chart in figure 2. It becomes an adult larva. It mates, and then it produces a microscopic larva, estimated as at nearly 1,500 young one per worm. So you can imagine the devastating effect. It is then digested. It goes into the bloodstream through the intestine walls. Once it enters the bloodstream, it keeps going until it gets out of the blood vessels into human muscles, where it finds a permanent residence for itself. This residence could be a muscle of a heart, it could be a muscle of the
brain,
the tongue. Some said it could possibly also, yes, be a muscle of a brain or nervous system, resulting in very, very serious type of ailment. According to a book called Human Hematology by Faust, he says that the larva encapsulated or calcified could be viable for as long as 6 years in terms of its potential harm. This is just a brief indication of it. I suppose that since our time is getting close, if you wish to carry on that next time.
Well, I think perhaps we have to leave it till next time. I just want to say that this has been a very informative program for me. I found it very interesting, and I trust that the viewers of the program have also found it educational and interesting. Our time for today is gone. We want to invite you back next week when we'll continue our discussion. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
Allahu Akbar.